Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation Season 6, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and as you can see, we are doing something very different for right now. We are getting a whole remodel of the comic book offices here in lovely Nashville, Tennessee. And so we're going to be at home for a minute. We're all at home. It's like the COVID era again. Oh, man, I'm having flashbacks. But we're bigger and better than ever at Comic Book Nation. So let's just go, man. Let's just go. And RIP to our old studio. I'm going to miss you. You brought us out of the pandemic. We had some great memories. I don't think we're legally covered to sing the Boys to Men song because I don't think we could pay for it. But you know the tune. We'll just hum a little. I think that's all we can afford. So let's keep going. But today we have a whole show. We do it all for geek culture. We're never joking about that. And today we've got so much to cover. There's big things in geek movie news. Our main topic today will be kind of the peak geek TV. We are experiencing some euphoria right now with a bunch of TV shows hitting and delivering. So we're going to get into all of that. Yeah, plus news could get spicy again, just like it did the last couple of weeks, because after our infamous Crow debate about the first pictures of the Crow, now we got a whole ass trailer to talk about. So we got to get into that. And I'm so excited. So things are happening on the horror front with Scream and the whole Scream franchise that we got to get into. As I said, we're going to be talking about Halo. Invincible Season 2 Part 2 is here. Shogun is still here. And we got to hear from our own, very own John Blackthorne, a.k.a. Connor Casey, who is back with us from the shores of Italy. We haven't heard from him about Shogun. And, you know, we always got to get the Blackthorne view on things. Plus, Marvel has done a whole X-Men relaunch. And we have got to get into that because there's some interesting things to talk about there. So a little bit of comics talk as well. If you guys are just getting into our show, it's been a busy week. There are a lot more voices or a lot more people listening out here. We've had a jump in some listeners, mainly due to our last few podcasts and, you know, our new whole Comic Book Nation, which is full of spinoff shows. So if you are just getting into us, make sure you subscribe to our podcast feeds. We're on all the major ones, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, because we have a lot that we're doing. We do all things for geek culture. So we have Anime Initiative that kicks off the week every week with our expert comic book anime team talking all things anime. We also have Matt every Wednesday doing the poll list where all the new major publisher and indie comics get. We just filter them through Matt's head, and he picks out the best ones for you guys to know about, and we get into it. We also sometimes have to get into it if things aren't hitting like they should be. Me and Matt are also doing recaps of Halo Season 2, which we realize some of you may not have access to the wonderful mountain of entertainment that is Paramount Plus, but we are out here just kind of sharing with you guys whether or not this show is really coming up big in the second season, and spoilers, we'll be getting into it here today. Also, we have Invincible Season 2 recaps happening. I'm joined by a variety of hosts, from Logan Moore to our own assistant managing editor, J.K. Schmidt, to tell you guys what is happening in Invincible and to just kind of murk out about some of the crazier things that are going on in that show. Yeah, it's a lot we got going on. If you're an MCU head, you can go over to the feed of Phase Zero, say that three times fast, and check out all things MCU. And Pokemon fans, we still have our Pokemon, A Wild Pokemon Has Appeared podcast, so check out all of that as well. All right, those are all the ads we got to do. So let's get into the show this week. Janelle,
yeah.
Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. The Crow, you had very strong. It was just you, me, and Matt here. I mean, Connor wasn't even here. And things still exploded in getting real spicy. And shout out to Brywood in the comics asking if we hired Bob Chapek with all these episodes we're doing. Yeah, we flood in the zone. Yo, the man had to go somewhere. I mean, Disney didn't want him, so he had to go somewhere. So we were like, hey, we got a $5.99 bargain bin. You know, we can take that and we'll make some stuff. But let's get back to subject. So, Janelle, now you were you were fired up about the Crow pictures. And those were just pictures.
Yeah.
The mullet, the nipple tattoos, all of it. You were not in for Gen Z's Crow. And, you know, your millennial / Gen X liner sensibilities were offended by what you saw. How did you feel about a whole ass trailer?
Yeah. Okay. So the mullet aside, which you can't really tell that he has a mullet, like it's not as pronounced as you think. I think this looks amazing. I am really, really excited about this. I mean, the violence, the blood, the concept of like him coming back and the way that he does, like God, the mullet is so bad, but it's just like the shaved on the sides and I just wish they would have given me long hair. But aside from that, like the nipple tattoos don't bother me. I think his body looks insane. I had no idea he was hiding. Isn't this Pennywise?
Yeah.
Like Pennywise is jacked. It's crazy. I'm very intrigued about the storyline. Obviously, I think it mirrors the original like a lot, which is kind of what I wanted. I expect that. It's been long enough where I don't need like a continuation. I just kind of need something that is very close to the original. So I'm hoping that we get that. We have the trench coat. So I'm down with that. I'm very happy about it. And I'm just going to look the other way when it comes to the mullet. I'm still complaining. I don't like it, but this looks awesome.
Listen, I'm not going to get into this because, you know, we had a very spirited debate about this when we were looking at the pictures and about we got into Nashville. It got really close, literally close to home. But we know, I mean, the kind of haircut and the dangly earrings, like we know around these parts that's a vibe.
Familiar for us. Yeah, yes,
it's a vibe, like we know, and I'm not saying any more than that. I'm just saying that around here it is a vibe. Yeah. So I don't like it in real life either, but like I guess that's where we are.
Yep.
Here's what I'll say. I'll say, because this still got a lot of hate online, like this did not win over a lot of people.
I know, which is such a bummer to me.
Yeah, it is. I had mixed opinions because I feel like what they've done here is at least they're not imitating the gothic aspect and atmosphere of the first Crow movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel in any way that that's being replicated here. It's not style over substance, which that movie very much was. Mm-hmm. This is playing more with like, and people, I don't know why this is a criticism, but it is. But people like are saying like it's John Wick, but with this kind of undead mechanic to it that you've added. And that's what I thought was the most interesting thing about this trailer. Like the scenes with how he's taking out people by willing to take himself out. Like we've seen Wolverine and people do that kind of stuff, but this trailer makes it gross and gruesome and makes it look like by the time this guy is done, like this is going to be some There Will Be Bloodish where he's just at the end. He just looks at the camera. He's like, I'm done. And he just like drops dead. That'd be hilarious. And I would love it. But he's going to be like slathered in blood. And this is not going to be an easy road of revenge for him or anybody else. And that's the kind of thing that it appealed to, that James Wan Death Note or whatever that what was that Kevin Bacon movie he did? I always forget it because there's too many death movies. You know what I'm talking about, though. Come on, Kevin listeners, Bacon. Help me out. God, you guys leave me hanging so much here. We need to draft in like one of those weird encyclopedia head people who knows all the
death
stuff.
Death
Sentence, yeah.
Yay, hey, I did it.
Thank you,
right off the tongue, that one, Yay. Kofi.
Yeah.
No, there's so many. His previous film he was involved in right before that was Dead Silence. So, like, you know
you
what I'm saying?
You can't complain about people not knowing when you don't know.
But, bro, there's, like, I like, know a lot. Absurd. That's not that I didn't know. I didn't want to say the wrong
you
death.
Clearly did.
I was going to say, I almost said Death Note, and then the whole anime crew would be coming for me. I've got to watch out for, like, 15 different worlds.
I'm glad you said death, though, because when I Googled, I just wrote Kevin Bacon
chill.
Death.
Because I'll stand, whoever wants to stand up and keep track of all these genres and all these titles with me, I will take you down. Let's go. But anyway, it was Death Sentence. Thank you, Janelle.
Yay!
But it appealed to me on that visceral, I saw the devil, death sentence, visceral kind of bloody, gruesome revenge story with an interesting mechanic of a person who can't die. So I kind of dug that. And I feel like, again, it's bad to doubt somebody like Bill Skarsgård, who keeps surprising us with pretty much everything he does, jumping from a Pennywise to playing a truly unhinged and scary villain in the John Wick franchise without looking like he could throw down at all. So I don't think anybody should count out what this guy does for a performance. And he's not even just jacked for this. He has another movie that came out called Boy Kills World, which was kind of a indie thing lad that came out and is coming out this year also, which he plays a deaf man who gets trained in the jungle to get revenge on the murderers of his family. So and if you've ever seen the photos from that, like he is ripped because it's a martial arts movie and like, it's another thing. So he's taking an action turn and like, it looks like the boy committed and I trust his commitment. That's all I'm going to say.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I know that it's not like traditionally super gothic, but I will say it is extremely dark. Yeah. Like, to me, it seems really dark and twisted. So at
are
least
we allowed
like,
to say gritty again, like in terms
gritty,
of movie?
Gritty.
After the Dark Knight trilogy, we weren't allowed to say that. Or like Batman v Superman.
I give you permission.
Okay.
Yeah, it feels gritty. That's a good one.
Thank you.
But I mean, I feel like you're either going to love it or hate it. But I now that I'm seeing more, I think overall I'm just excited to see what's going to happen, because I like to go into everything with a positive headspace, you know, like, okay, this could be really cool. And this specific trailer gave me so much story, so much action. Like, I know exactly what's going on and I'm super intrigued and I really need to see this. So it feels emotional too. So I have very high hopes for this.
Matt and Connor, you guys are being real quiet over there. What's going on?
Connor, go ahead.
All right. Well, I have not been on since the initial look dropped. And as soon as I saw it, I went, oh, Sting and Darby Allin literally had a baby. And Matt gets that reference and it actually kind of fits. So I'm happy with I don't hate the look, goofy as it is. It's you got to go with something different to stand out. You can't just do the Brandon Lee look again, because that's all people will compare it to. So the look doesn't bother me nearly as much as it did some people online. The trailer actually really won me over, because when it comes to The Crow, this is a movie that a decade ago, it seemed like a story would come out every 3 months where they'd say, we're making a Crow movie, we swear, and they'd lose a director, they'd lose the writer. Luke Evans was attached to this thing forever. I had resigned myself to the point where, like, guys, look, this property is cursed. You lost your leading man way back when the first one came out. The fact that that movie was actually pretty good is kind of a low-key miracle. It's never been good since. They've had direct-to-DVD sequels that nobody paid attention to. Nobody really brings up the comic adaptations. It was fine to just sit there in the 90s with The Cure in the background and the face paint and the hair, and that be it. So for the fact that this trailer actually looks pretty solid, I'm shocked how much this won me over. The look, you guys talk about how it feels gothic. I get that too. But if you guys remember that Lee Winnell movie Upgrade from a few years back, the look actually reminds me of that. There's a little bit of cyberpunk thrown in there. There's obviously the Gen Z influences. It's dirty, it's grimy, it's bloody. And I love the way that movie looked. And I feel like, even though it's not the same director, Blumhouse isn't involved, feels like some of that got carried over into this. And I dig that. The one thing I'll say is that one thing that people tend to forget about The Crow is that there's some levity to it. If you go back and watch the movie, Brandon Lee's swinging from the ceiling back and forth, like mocking his victims. He's quoting Edgar Allan Poe. Like, the guy's having fun with it. And if you ever watch the sequels, they lost that point. They just went super serious and no, it's about revenge. It's dark, it's bloody, it's murderous. And yeah, I hope with this that they remember at least a little bit of that. And it's not just, oh, it's John Wick, but you can shoot him now.
You're right, though. It definitely seems like he's taken it very seriously. Like, it just seems heart-wrenching. The whole thing seems very, very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Rupert Sanders, the director of Snow White and the Huntsman, who has a real thing for birds, if we just want to get into that, and crows, because half that movie is crows. So, sorry, I didn't mean to choke you out, Matt. But, yeah. He is to crows what Matt is to helmets. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty wild. But Matt, you don't necessarily go for these types of movies. So close us out. How do you feel?
I don't. But man, I got to say, I'm with the crew here. I really dug this. It surprised the hell out of me. I was like, by the end of it, yeah, I'll see that. that's got me. I think all of the descriptions, though, were apt, right? It is very John Wick with guns and being able to stab himself. And, you know, I dig that Wolverine Deadpool aspect, right? I do hope there's some levity there. The trailer didn't really give much indication of that at all. So I do hope
they just smash a guy with a shotgun. What's not funny about that?
I do hope they're able to break it up. I think we'll get to the end of this, and this whole story will really just be about, you know, the crow trying to climb Everest. I think Connor should get that one.
I get that joke.
I think that's what it really is about.
You guys and your wrestling. But there is, I mean, it is a funny part where, I mean, the guy does walk out into a theater and toss two heads into the crowd. So there's going to be something funny in here, I think. So, you know, it just depends on what you consider funny, you know? All right, let's move on because we got it deep into that rabbit hole, but we had some strong feelings about The Crow, but this was unusually positive. I threw this in here thinking there would be chaos, conflict, and a little bloodshed on our side, but none of that happened. Oh, well. So, in other news that is disappointing, but we probably should have saw coming, The Batman 2. We will not be getting The Batman 2 in 2025. The Batman 2 has been knocked back to 2026. And talk about, you know, things that are starting to feel like cursed franchises. Like, we already had to delay the first movie until, when did that come out? 2021 or 20? That was 2022, right? Oh my God. Wow. Now we're getting the second one in 2026. Jeez Louise, am I going to care? Hopefully. I mean, my whole takeaway from this, where, you know, some people were trying to downplay it in our Slack channel, but I'm just preparing for an entire year of from Superman 2025 to when this movie comes out in 2026. To are these in the same universe articles and questions and repeated answers and re-repeated answers to all of this. I don't know. This one just feels like I get it because of the writers and the actor strikes, like everything that Warner Brothers probably has going on that the other actors, directors have going on. This is when we can get this, but it just feels like the momentum there is starting to fade. And I love the Batman. This is not the Batman hate. It's becoming my regular Halloween rotation. Like I appreciate the movie more and more as just a great detective noir story after I've seen it. And maybe the Penguin will be here to kind of bridge the gap, right? To kind of get us back into that universe. It's coming out late this year, maybe in a little bit into 2025. It'll get us thirsty, and then we'll be like, oh, it's just a year, and then we're going to get the Batman part two. So hopefully that's the effect that happens, because as we will talk as a theme today, sometimes some of these breaks and delays can be really detrimental to a franchise. So we're going to get into all of that. But yes, it is now coming out early October in 2026. So yeah. On a lighter note, though, we did have a fun, you know, we're not going to get into the Oscars because it's a week ago, but, you know, congrats to Chris Nolan. He finally got Chris Nolan leveled up and got that Oscar. I know a bunch of Oppenheimer people were happy about that. I love that movie. We did a whole episode on it. Go back and listen to Connor, Casey, and I break down Oppenheimer right after we saw it. It's a great episode of this show. We did have a fun little Batman reunion. That was Oscars can be so painful. Yeah. Oh, I would have let it play because I love that clip. But Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger getting up and doing a little bit with Michael Keaton at the Oscars kind of redeemed most of the Oscars for me. Like, yeah, when those bits can be so bad, but this one was so good. And Michael Keaton never misses a beat, just being in the crowd, just being like, yeah,
just effortlessly switching back into Batman for a second.
Yeah. Bring it. And you just go back and you remember when people were like, this guy, the comedy guy, he can't ever, Beetlejuice guy, he can't ever be Batman. And it's just like, oh yes, he can. Yeah, so that was great. Just a little side note. We love funny things. We're positive sometime around here. But yeah, while we wait, there he is, the man himself. Batman.
What's funnier is that Schwarzenegger didn't fight him. They're just like, nope, roll with it. He's Batman.
Yeah. Gotta love that. You should be watching the live show so you can enjoy little moments like this with us. But Matt, let's talk about in the ever shifting lanes of getting the bag, losing the bag, getting the bag again. Let's talk some horror. What's happening over here?
Yeah, so one movie that seemed to be in just dire straits is seemingly back on track. So Scream 7 lost its director, two of its stars. One star it fired, and then the other star it lost to scheduling conflicts. There's been some murkiness to that, but now it seems back on track because Scream 7 is bringing back Neve Campbell, Sydney Prescott, the star of the, I feel like it's okay. There have been a lot of stars of the franchise, but like, you know, the one who is just completely synonymous with it is Sydney. And she is coming back for the seventh movie, but also Kevin Williamson will be directing this movie. So they filled both spots with big names that the franchise fans will hopefully get on board with. Campbell posted a big kind of a longer thing, a picture of the script, and went into detail about, you know, being excited to come back and also teaming with Williamson specifically, because now he's, you know, going to be in the director's chair for this one. So, good news if you're, you know, it was, we talked a lot about the drama surrounding kind of the, what seemed to be this like resurgent franchise and, oh my God, they're going to jump on the momentum. And then it's just like crumbled in a matter of, it felt like a month. So now it seems, I mean, I think this is as positive unless you said, oh, everybody's back. That was not going to be there for the last one. You know, this is about the best next step I feel like they could take. But I mean, I adore this franchise. I'm excited to see her back in the mix, but I don't know how you guys feel.
Like, I mean, what was the last one she did? Was that Scream 5? Yeah.
Is it 5? Yeah, I think it was 5.
Yeah, she was in 5.
Before the, like, yeah.
Yeah, it was before the New York one. And that was okay. That wasn't bad. Like, that's kind of part of what got us back on the track. But Neve Campbell's always been reluctant. She wasn't in that too much because that's the one that set up Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega and kind of did that. And she was a legacy character, and they did the whole requel. They did the riff on the requels and the legacy sequels and all that. And that was good. As always with Scream, it's always a challenge because it's not just bringing back a star. And doing another slasher. You have to find some way to do that kind of meta commentary over top of it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, or if they just kind of use this whole real life situation to play into the movie as well, which could be a really smart script if done right, about why we're back with Sydney and all of that. So we know the dump truck full of money got backed up. People were pinging me saying, you hear that sound? Eep, eep, eep. That's a dump truck getting up to Neve Campbell's house with that money dump. But I also included in the rundown that, you know, while I was out seeing other movies in the past weeks, I also caught the trailer, because I don't really watch trailers that much anymore online, but I caught the trailer for Abigail, which is the new film that Radio Silence and Melissa Barrera made with the team behind Scream 6. They have a new movie coming out, and it looks pretty wonderful. Like, it looks pretty great. And if you haven't heard about this movie, it's about a group of people who are hired by Gus Fring to go into a house one night and just safeguard this little girl who they think is like a wealthy heiress or something. And they get locked in there and they're just like, whoa, what's happening there? And it turns out that little wealthy ballerina girl is actually an ancient vampire. And so they are the buffet for the night. And so, yeah, it and it looks like a great film. So I don't know, man. Like, I hope they got something good cooked up for Scream 7, because it looks like the team behind Scream 6 going to be all right. And it's going to be really all right, because, yeah, in terms of this, looks like it could be like, you know, them doing for for vampire films where they just did for slashers, which is really make us excited about these things in a exciting way again. So yeah, it's also one of the last performances of Angus Cloud from Euphoria. So, you know, that whole Euphoria crowd's going to be there for that. And yeah, this one looks pretty, pretty good. So I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah, and Ortega's doing well too, right? She's doing Wednesday season 2. Yeah. So, I mean, like, the whole group is just doing
Jenna Ortega's basically, like, taking over the world. She's fine. So, I don't know, man. Yeah, so, yeah, and Abigail's Catherine Newton, Kevin Durant, Angus Cloud, Giancarlo Esposito.
Wait, actual Kevin Durant or
Kevin Durand?
Okay,
Yeah, no, not Kevin Durant. No, Dan Stevens. Say,
Phoenix Sun star player? No. No.
Oh, Matthew Good, Dan Stevens. Yeah, this movie is going to be something crazy. Like, yeah, we'll be on the Abigail.
I guess we know it's not going to win a championship.
They weren't going to win anyway.
Stop it. But I don't know, man. Well, hopefully they come up with something good for Scream 7 because I was really on board with the team that was on it, and Scream 6 surprised the hell out of me last year. And so in this new movie, Abigail looks pretty good. So I don't know, man. I don't know who's going to win out in this one. All right, let's take a quick break. But when we get back, it's time that we have a thick back half where we got to get into peak geek TV. There's a lot of good TV to talk about. We also got to talk about Matt's agenda. He has something games, something, as I put it.
My favorite part of the rundown.
Yeah, and we got to get all into X-Men's big relaunch, which is coming our way. New books, new creative teams, new angles, and my theory on how every generation is getting their own X-Men. Stay tuned for Comic Book Nation.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome back to Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture and the official podcast of comicbook.com. If you missed our first half, we just talked about some big news that had been dropping over the week, including the Crow trailer, Neve Campbell coming back for Scream 7 and the showdown with those Scream 6 team. Plus, I talked about the Batman 2 being delayed and all that goes with that. So let's get into some main topic. So this week we are talking about peak geek TV, which is when we feel whenever kind of, fan shows that appeal to geek fandoms really seem to be hitting. And we like to take a moment to kind of appreciate that, because we've done this podcast when there has been a desert of content out there. Go back and listen to seasons 2 and 3 for those pandemic era episodes to hear us just searching through. You know, we were like Maldives all out there in the desert, putting our ears to the ground, trying to find a little bit of water. But now we're kind of rich with stuff. And this week we're going to highlight Invincible Season 2, Part 2, Halo Season 2 coming towards its exciting end, as well as Shogun, which we must absolutely just spend time discussing because. So I'm going to start off with Invincible Season 2, Part 2. We have an entire recap episode of Episode 5. Myself and J.K. Schmidt sit down and pull apart this episode. Everything that happens, it's pretty dense. I've been writing these recaps, and somehow Invincible has a denser recap than even Halo, even though it's 15 minutes shorter, but they pack a lot in. And we also talk about just the whole kind of effect of having this delay in coming back and what it may have done. So for the full spoilers of that discussion, go listen to that on our feed. But keeping it spoiler free over here, what did you guys think? Connor, I know you're a big Invincible fan. You read the comics and you are sometimes hit or miss about what this show is doing. So how did you, I mean, you like it in general, but I know you don't always agree with everything, but how did you feel about the delay and coming and making this episode as a comeback?
The delay was frustrating. And if you watched, you know, when we talked about the first half, it didn't really feel like there was enough to be like, yeah, you'll be satiated with this first half of episodes. Like, no, there's a lot more we need to get into. And you're making us wait unnecessarily. But you know what? Getting into the whole thing about animation production and crunch and, you know, what studios demand, I'm throwing my hands up and saying there's a lot I don't know. And I'm just happy that when I get more of this. And that was my reaction to this was, God, I missed this show. And more than anything, like this episode didn't have a big shocker like, uh-oh, somebody died or somebody's back or something horrific happened. It was like, no, it's just more of what we've already established. And there's several conflicts all going on at once. And I think what really dawned on me was that I have missed geek culture, comic book culture, having a Timverse. I miss it having a show that everybody talks about where it's just a big team of superheroes and they're all doing different stuff and there's different storylines going on. We don't really have that right now. The CW, what's left of their superhero menagerie is basically gone. Since there are no Saturday morning cartoons anymore, there's no animated Batman show right now. We're still waiting on that next one. There's no Superman show. There's not really even anything over on the Marvel side other than, you know, what we talk about here each week on Disney Plus. So I'm just glad that there's a show like this where week after week, it's a big old team of superheroes and a crazy barrage of villains coming at them each week. And you're just tuning in next week to see what happens. I've missed that. I'm glad it's back.
Oh, you're muted, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Nope. Okay. And we'll keep going. I'll give my little rundown.
Do it.
I will say, this was so gory. Like, this episode was so gory. It was like disturbing to me. And this is like the first time that I watching the show that I was like, oh my God, they might lose. Like, lose. Like, everyone might lose. And it's very rare that you feel that way with any superhero content lately, because you always know they're going to succeed. But man, like, the stakes felt really high for me in this episode, and I was kind of loving it. I was kind of hating it because it's like disturbing, but I really felt like the stakes. I was like, oh my gosh, this is really crazy. And I love that they have so many different storylines. You're right about that. Like, every time they jump from something else, I would feel even more intriguing and I would be even more interested and on the hook. And I can't believe that they can pack in this much story into these episodes. Like, it is really incredible how much storytelling they're getting in such a short amount of time. And can people just take lessons from this, that it works and we can handle it? Can we get this in live action, please? Like, we can take this in. We can follow. I don't even know these characters. I've never read the comics. I forget last season. I forget the first part of this season. Yet, I was just loving every minute of this episode.
Am I back? Can you hear me?
Yes, you are back.
Yes, sir. All right. I was going to say, a couple points. I was going to say, I know Connor's read the comics, but I might disagree that people who haven't might disagree that there aren't some shocks in this episode, because there are definitely a few shocks in this episode. I would also say that that's one thing I've kind of also been hearing online, is people being like, oh, you know, the second batch of episodes got here and I don't even remember what happened in the first. And that's not to say you, Janelle, because I know you're very busy and we make you watch everything. So this is taking you out of the conversation. But for casual people who are just like saying they can't get back into this because they can't, it's like, what are we saying? Like, all of this is sitting on a streaming service. You can go back and press play and do this again. Like, it's not the end of the world to catch up.
Yeah, the recap was very well done.
They do a recap. This is not hard to get back into it. I don't know what's happened. I know the pandemic and just the digital age has screwed everybody up, but like, guys, we got to remember what time is. Like, a couple months is a couple months. It's not 2 years.
Yeah.
They can feel like the same thing these days, but they're not the same thing. A couple months is a couple months. We all remember when Mark and Omni-Man were throwing down on Thraxa. That's not something you just forgot about. Like, that just happened a little bit ago. It's in a frustrating break. I don't think Amazon should ever do this again. Like, either you have a season ready or you don't. Like, get it together and just have it ready and then deploy it however you're going to deploy it. This is a show that you should have had gone with the strategy that you had, which is dump first seasons as a binge. Once they get popular enough, come back with a second season weekly and get your returns. Like, that should have been this. Don't try to do this Netflix crap. You're not Netflix. Like, you don't try to split up these seasons. We're not selling DVDs anymore. So everybody chill. But that said, like, yeah, you could get back into this. And yeah, this episode is dense. Like, there is a lot that has to happen, like from where Mark starts to him just coming back to Earth. But as I wrote the review for all, because I've seen all four episodes and I just kind of reviewed the entire season as somebody who did not read the comics, I said that this does the hard work of a sophomore season of growing up your character, expanding his or her or her or their world, and making that development happen across all these characters is a big undertaking. But you see, you know, how thick and rich this world is just from an episode like this, where Mark coming back to Earth has like a checklist of things that are going to happen when he comes back to Earth. And we don't even get into all of it. Like, we don't even get the words like Viltrumites, Angstrom Levy, words like that, that were major, are not even mentioned. This is stuff that's still hanging over all the stuff we've got to do. So I thought this was a good episode, and the where it ended, I just was kind of like, if you had just kept this season going, my only thing I've said is if you've kept this season going and this was the follow-up a week later to episode 4, like, this show's hype would have been like out of off planet high, like, yeah, going into Christmas. Like, it'd have been insane. So yeah. I think they kind of blew the bag on that front, but I thought this was a good comeback episode. And I, again, did not read the comics, so I have no idea, like, some of these things are coming until they start happening, and I'm like, wait, what? And, yeah, this had some pretty gruesome and brutal things, and it reminds you very quickly what the world of Invincible is all about. But then we also get a stinger that's a little more hopeful that reminds us that this is still a comic book world, and we can still have a few surprises coming our way, so... That was pretty good.
Does anybody else have the problem, though, when Peter Cullen is on screen? Whenever he just starts talking, I'm like, I'm just hearing Optimus Prime monologue, guys. I just want to hear him shout, one shall stand, one shall fall.
Well, I don't think that's ever a problem. I mean, that's like telling an actor to just do one thing is always weird. But like, I think what they do and what this show and the makers do is everything is kind of has a level of satire to it. And so I feel like they make Peter Cullen deliver lines that sound very optimist-y, and yeah, they know that he sounds very optimist-y. And like, he's going to deliver a lot of those monologues that are going to be like the rousing ones, right? Like, we can unite to defend the universe. And like, you're going to be like, oh man, and it's going to be like all rousing. So, I mean, it's only been all my life that I've been like hearing this man's voice, you know, inspire me. So, but yeah, but I think
I'm more distracted with Seth. Yes, I'm way more distracted with Seth.
But I love the way they use him because it's total Seth Rogen. Like, you don't hire him.
He should be smoking a bowl. Like, I don't. His character just should be.
Kobe, do it, Seth.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't. No, that's Brandon Davis. I don't try to step on Preston's word. No, I can't do it. Brandon Davis does the better Seth Rogen, and that's his. I don't need to compete on that and lose. I'm good. So yeah, I mean, anybody else? Matt, did you want to jump in? I think we skipped you here.
No, but I mean, it's fine. I mean, you covered a lot of it. I mean, I thought this was a good episode. For me, I come at it because I agree with you. Your ultimate point of did it lose some momentum amongst the like conversation of all the things we've got going on and shows and things? Yes. And I feel like that is probably a missed opportunity. For me personally, I don't mind breaks. I'm starting to get to the point where like a delay or whatever is like, number one, it's pretty like old hat at this point. I'm pretty used to it. But two, it actually just gives me time to watch other stuff. So I'm like, look, we're blessed to be doing what we do, right? So there's like no actual shortage of content outside of TV. So if this thing does, you know, stops for a couple months, I just use that to like go and play games or go do whatever, read a book or do it. Like there's so much other stuff to take in that I don't care. Like I was like, oh, great. Invincible's back. That's how I look at it. I didn't even miss it because it was just so much other stuff going on. I was like, oh, that's great. But I know I'm not like, you know, I know that's not the same for everyone. And so some people are just like, it's all about Invincible. And for those people, I can totally see how a couple months drop off would suck. And then also too, it does take it out of the conversation. And when there's so much content hitting, that will hurt it when it comes to, you know, year end discussions or award discussions of like, what was the great thing? Sometimes that time away, especially in the middle of a season, can kind of knock it out of your mind's orbit a little bit. So I get it. But this was a good episode. I really dug it. I'm enjoying this a lot. I do agree with Janelle. There are some times where, like, animation or not, I wince at some of the things they pull off in the show. Like, oh my God, why would you bend a leg like that? Why would it break? Like, there's some things that just truly shocked me along the lines of The Boys. The Boys does the same thing. I watch that show and go, oh God. And I know things are coming. I know things are happening and I expect it, but wow, they still manage to trip me out a little bit every so often. So Invincible does the same thing, but great, great TV.
Yeah. And I got to say, it's great for somebody like me who hasn't read the comics, because this show, I mean, it never goes where you think it's going to go, and where you, what happens is never what you think is going to happen. And I love that. So
yeah,
that's on Amazon Prime Video. And I've seen a lot of people just kind of coming for Amazon because they didn't necessarily push this debut. I mean, we were even kind of confused about when it was coming back. So they didn't do a great job. If you're going to split things into two parts, you need to get a whole PR rollout for the second part. And that didn't happen. And a lot of people, the major reaction was like, wait, why am I seeing Invincible on the timeline? Wait, it's back. And then people being like, oh my God.
That's not a good thing.
No. Somebody was trying to chime in with something, I feel like, before we get
out. No, you're good.
All right, well, you get to talk anyway, because you are the sole person. Before we get into episode 4, we want to go back and just kind of get your impressions of Shogun, because you have not been here when we started kind of getting into this show, which has quickly exploded into becoming, you know, if not the most acclaimed show of 2024, it's really up there at the top and is in the running for, you know, best of the year already. So how did you like this? And were you familiar with any of the source material before this?
So I freaking love this. And what was driving me nuts about it was when I left the day it premiered, and then throughout Italy, they had all these advertisements for Disney Plus. Now they don't have Hulu over there, so they just kept advertising stuff that was going to be on Hulu, but then you'd have the Disney logo next to it. So it's like this and Poor Things were everywhere. And it's like, on the family friendly Disney channel. Which is just so bizarre. And then I come back, I'm like, okay, we're binging this now. And it's incredible. I have never read the book. I've never watched the original miniseries. But if you're going to give me a show, a video game, a movie, what have you, set in this era of Japan, it's like selling water in the desert. It is the easiest sell in the world to me. So I dug the hell out of this. This is Game of Thrones in Japan. It's got all the intrigue. It's got great characters. In a way, it does feel, I was sitting back, I'm like, even if I didn't know that this was based on a book, this feels like this was a book where you think the main character is going to be Sonata. It's not. It's Blackthorn. And you see him at the absolute lowest rung on his way into the country, and then slowly, gradually build his way up with different relationships and different, you know, gaining different allies and different enemies, to the point now where I'm just like, I really hope this guy doesn't have just some tragic ending. But I also know this is that era of Japan where that absolutely could happen. But the moment you start looking up the history of this stuff, you go, no, these were some of these guys that are the characters in this show were big role players in actual Japanese history. So even though it's not hard to look up what actually happened, I'm holding that against myself where I'm just like, no, I'm not going to do that. I just want to sit on the edge of my seat and watch every conversation unfold. And yet, you know, we talk about peak TV. This fits right in.
Yeah. So there you go. There's Connor. He's all caught up with us. So let's get into episode 4, which is reminding me because, first of all, I'm going to go on a bit of a soapbox and say, like, one thing that is bothering me is I thought there would be more people who had actually, like, read this book because this novel is so famous. Some of y'all got to get outside and touch more grass and read more. Everybody, read more. Get outside. This is one of the best books I think I've ever read because it is just like the experience of the show. You get to know the characters, and it's not easy because, I mean, like, those are Japanese names you're reading and things like that. You got to keep straight. But it's just so well written, and this was Game of Thrones. This was written in 1975. This was Game of Thrones long before Slow Mo Martin picked up a typewriter and started banging it out and trying to make his thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was a big fan of this novel as well, because there's so much of it that seems coded into what he did. Mm. So I'm frustrated.
Tornaga is just Ned Stark. Like, it's a
What are you saying?
Yeah.
Toranaga could never be Ned Stark. Toranaga keeping his head and making moves and dips he needs to dip.
He's first season Ned Stark, where it's like, I clearly have a responsibility. I could seize power if you just ask me. I don't want to. I'm the only responsible one around here, and I'm surrounded by bastards.
You guys are, I love this. I got to write this article. I really do got to write this article, though, because I think people still. It's much more pronounced in the book about, and even this thing about the eightfold fence. Like, you have to realize, like, what they're telling you in these things, in these moments, is what this is doing is talking, kind of breaking down Japanese psychology at the feudal time about how people can have these aspects that self that they have to do the duty, the honor, the stuff with that hides, you know, who they are inside, their personal desires, hungers, ambitions, and all of that, and these being kind of separate worlds within people and things like that. And you got to really kind of be careful, because what I love about this story, the show, the book, and what they're doing in the show is nobody is a Ned Stark in this. Like, Ned Stark was kind of like noble to a fault, right? Nobody in this show is noble. If you watch carefully, everybody from the lowliest little guy in the first episode, who you think is just the bum that Blackthorne has to translate with, who turns out to be Toranaga's spy, to things in this episode like that courtesan who keeps showing up at key moments that nobody seems to key in on, who is whispering in you know, the nephew's ear about, oh, if he was in charge instead of his uncle. And then the nephew manipulates, you know, Toranaga's son right after that. It's like, okay, well, who is the courtesan saying that for? Is it for herself? Is it for somebody else? And who's doing it and why? Like, everybody has an agenda in this. Everybody has multiple facets to themselves. Everybody has like a false master, a true master, like somebody they're working for. And that's what I love about the show is this is Game of Thrones, but it's way more complex. There's way more, many more people who are secretly playing sides, influencing things, pushing things, you know, trying to take advantage of things. And I love it. And I love just how the sides, you know, Japan's lords are infighting. There's even Christianity has this massive kind of infight happening within itself. It's great stuff. And this episode, episode 4, it just kind of builds on it because we begin to see how that complexity plays out, right? Like, you think by the end of episode 3, like, Blackthorn and Toranaga are BFF. They're swimming together. But then Toranaga kind of dips and then just leaves him hostage, basically, in this episode, which is one of my favorite things about, I think the book also does highlight more, is what the nature of hostage is in feudal Japan, where you get kind of soft, polite treatment, but you're really a political tool being kind of used and softly kept in place. And that's kind of what happens. So I thought that was really good in how you see little shades of who Toranaga is in this. Like, when he comes to Izu, and I always just don't want to butcher these names. Yabashige. God, I love the guy who's like the Lord who's always like stuck between people and trying to boil people alive. Yeah. But yeah, I gotta keep this pulled up. Kashigi Yabashige. Yeah, Kashigi Yabashige, who's played by the wonderful Tadanobu Asano. Yeah. So whenever Yabashige like gets off the boat and the men are cheering for him, and then you see Torunaga kind of come up and then spin that around so that they're cheering even harder for him, and you just see Yabashige like, what just happened? Because he just dips again, Torunaga. King of dipping, man. I gotta take him as a example for my social life. Like, just come in, manipulate, get out, dip before anybody looks, and then, you know, have everybody cheering for you. But yeah, man, I could get into this for a whole show. Like, I could literally spend a whole show just talking about this show in some way. And some days I wish I was. But what did you guys think, Matt, Janelle? Because we've had some good discussions about this. Janelle, what'd you think about going into episode 4? And also, MVP Fujisama came out of this as a MVP that the internet is loving by the way she handled those guns. And yeah, yeah, I went to my wife and I was like, we got to have a talk. I pulled out my pistols and was like, let me see you defend this home. And she was like, what are you talking about? Anyway.
I will say that I feel like the show is getting better and better each episode. So it's obviously just a really strong show from the jump. But I mean, every episode, as you kind of get to know the characters more and more and it kind of reveals more of the storyline, I'm more and more intrigued by it. So I'm very impressed with this episode. I love the romantic connection. Obviously, the tension has been being built this entire time. So I love seeing that. And it does feel like Game of Thrones, but it like also doesn't. I feel like if you didn't like Game of Thrones, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't like this. It's I guess reminiscent of like drama, but I don't know. There's something different about it. Obviously, culturally, you can feel that. But what really intrigues me the most is what you told me, Kofi, is that how most of the show was built on actual history, like from that era and what was actually happening, because I love that. It's like I can take things at face value. Like, yes, we're following specific characters, but a lot of this was actually happening politically. And you know, in this manner with these countries. And that is so cool to me because it's like a history lesson on top of being interesting, which is just really special. You're muted.
I can't stress how much this book got me into. I was already a fan of anime and stuff like that, but you know, this was the time we were still calling it Japanimation. I didn't really know the culture that I was kind of dipping into. This book did light years of work for kind of catching me up on Japanese, because I was always obsessed with like samurais and ninjas, like, but in that little American boy way, like it's cool to throwing stars, right, and stuff. This book does a lot to teach you about, because it's a very Moby Dickish type of book. And if you don't know what that means, like Moby Dick has a whale hunt, but a lot of it is just descriptions of what whaling was like in New England in that early, yeah, part of like the 18th, 19th century. And so that's the value of the book. There's some stuff in there that you can't learn again unless you read volumes of historical text. But this book is the same way. Like everything about Japan, the feudal system, the whole philosophy and of life and death and honor and duty and all of that, and comparing it to Western society. This was the first book that taught me that like English people didn't believe in bathing. They thought it was death. You only bathe like once or twice in your life. Like you were born and you're like when you died and stuff like that. And all these different cultural things from history. I had no idea about, yeah, the whole, like what the system of like regents, Christianity spread, Magellan's past, like all of this stuff you learn from reading this book or even watching the show now. And it's fascinating to see where the parallels with history are. Speaking of brutality, one of the most historically real things in this episode, sorry, Janelle, we put you through the ringer of brutality this week. We made you watch some pretty gnarly stuff, but
I'm cool with it. I like it. I'm from a Walking Dead background. I got this.
Yeah. that whole thing with naval warfare and William Adams, who Blackthorne is based on, that's all very real. And that was kind of the game-changing thing about that period of history, was Japan beginning to learn about Western naval warfare and stuff like that. So, and precision cannon firing and all that kind of stuff and how to measure and all that. So, yeah, man, I mean, like we said, we could keep going on. We got other stuff to talk about, so I guess we should get to it. But Shogun, I'm hyped because, like I said, this was such a big, big, big thing for me, the book, and I was worried about this show coming out, but it's exceeded all expectations, and the cast is just killing it, and the production values are killing it. And yeah, man, I can't wait for the next episode. Finally, yeah, we got to talk. Me and Matt break down. I almost forgot about it. Halo. But Halo season 2 is coming to its end. And we got, you know, there was some shade thrown at us when I was talking about putting this in our peak Geek TV lineup. But I get it. Some people may not be tuning in to this or have Paramount Plus.
But it's definitely peak geek. I mean, this is geek defined.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to throw shade, that's okay. But like, we're going to be over here enjoying what has been an excellent rebound of a show. Like one of the bigger come ups for a show that I think I've ever seen between Halo season 1 and Halo season 2. And as I put in a headline that seems to be resonating with people, we are finally getting around to the events of the first Halo game for all you people who have been mad about that. We are here, and we're here in a better way that Matt and I, you know, go in depth on our kind of recap episode about why it mattered. Even Matt can see why you have to sometimes take off a helmet and get into something more to build a show up. And so, like, if he can have that growth, so can you guys. And so, yeah, this is included in our Peak Geek TV. Please go listen to our recap episode and our interview with Colonel Ackerson himself, Titan Star, Halo Star, Joseph Morgan. Matt sat down with him for an excellent conversation, and go check that out on the feed. But I am ready for this finale episode. All that's left for me is for Halo to prove they can do a Game of Thrones style big battle episode. The one in the season 1 finale was trash. We can just say it. It was trash. And we're really hoping that the season 2 finale will, you know, stick it to the haters and be like, here you go. Here's an awesome battle episode. And where we end is where you want us to end. We're going to get into the Halo video game stuff now. So definitely wanted to be here. Janelle or Connor, I mean, I know what Matt would say. He would say exactly what I would say because we already talked about it. But Janelle or Matt or Janelle or Connor, how are you feeling?
Janelle, ladies first.
You want me to go first? Okay. Yeah, this has been so exciting. I'm actually really curious. I mean, I have my blow up moment, the moment that I was just like finally so excited about because I've been complaining about it the whole time when we actually had a human pick up a sword and use it to kill someone. I've been waiting. I'm like, why aren't we picking up the other weapons like when they drop them? But how many more episodes do we have? Is there one more?
Yep. Next episode is the season finale.
One more. Wow. Yeah. I will say that I feel really confident about the lead up here. Like, I don't feel confused or that I've missed out on a lot of information. And, you know, with a lot of the Disney Plus shows, we've been thinking, how are they going to wrap this up with one episode? I don't feel that way with this. And that's a good feeling. I feel like we got a lot of information in this last episode of kind of like the whereabouts of everyone, what everyone's doing, the history, what the ring or the halo or the arch, whatever they all call it, different things is. So I loved the information of this episode. This is another one where I just feel like each episode is getting better. And I'm just really enjoying it. There is a lot going on, but again, I can follow, which is great. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I kind of do, but I don't. It's like, I want to predict it, but I feel like I'd rather just sit back and enjoy and watch what unfolds. Also, Klaus, I keep calling him Klaus from Vampire Diaries. Oh, he's so good. Morgan, like I love his character and he has a little bit of redemption. I love to see that. Halsey, her storyline is so interesting to me. Like that's the most interesting part of the whole show because I just want to know like about the scientific links and what everything means.
Oh, you know where we're going with that. We're getting into the deeper, crazier Halo lore.
Yeah.
Forerunners and the flood and all that. Yeah, it's coming.
I'm excited. I'm very excited about that storyline. So Yeah, I'm just very satisfied with the show. I wish everyone could see it, even if you just like do a trial and you binge it. Like, it's great. It's a great show. Yeah.
Connor, take us out on this subject. Just real quick, how'd you feel?
Man, I hate to throw the grenade on this, but I get that it is better than season one. And yes, episode four with the fall of Reach delivered. Everything since then has kind of been, okay, we are stumbling our way towards the actual stuff from the first game. Arbiter is here, but there's nothing that from what his character was in the games. I do not, as much as I love Bokeem Woodbine as an actor, I do not care about him and his wife looking for their kid. When it's John and it's Kai, they're fine. Maki feels like, hey, we hired her for the first season. She's back and we don't really know how to get rid of her. So let's just keep her around. There are ways that this thing can keep improving, but it's still just kind of stumbling its way forward and with some of the Halo iconography attached to it. You know, I'm glad you guys are enjoying it, but for me, it's like, tell me when the action scenes are popping up, because otherwise I'm just trying to fast forward through some of these scenes.
All right. Good to have you back, buddy. Okay. That's our thing for Halo. And I didn't throw it in here because I tend to enjoy it for my own personal enjoyment, but Star Wars The Bad Batch is in its final season and is better than ever. It is definitely darker. It's more mature. It's getting into the serious nitty gritty about what happens to these clones. How do they kind of band together or to survive or find their way into the Empire? And they're even tying it together with the mess of Rise of Skywalker to help explain the Emperor and the cloning and all that. So check that out on Disney Plus if you're not watching the other stuff we mentioned, because Star Wars The Bad Batch final season. And people have said, why don't you guys talk about this? Guys, I literally do everything in geek culture, but there's some things like I try to just enjoy and be able to watch. And that's one of them. I love Star Wars animation. I don't like hearing everybody's reaction to Star Wars animation all the time, so I just try to enjoy it. But Bad Batch is out here and we are watching it. All right. Now for Matt's agenda, Matt, take it away.
Yeah. Just wanted to really quickly highlight, and this actually is a perfect segue to what we've got coming up. But Marvel Champions is one of my favorite games. It's actually, you can see it in the background here. And we're adding Jubilee, one of my favorite X-Men characters, to the roster. She's the deck that is coming out later this year. Really kind of highlights the like lightheartedness and fun of the character. But like most champions in the game, if you put it in the right hands, like, she can be as deadly as anyone else. And what I love about this is that her ability set kind of highlights the spark show, right, that she's always known for, like her light abilities. It actually highlights you being able to use multiple resources to make those abilities even more powerful. So like, if something hits for damage, but depending on the resources you used, if you used a bunch more, sometimes you can add confuse to that, or you can stun somebody, or you can just make them hit harder. For those of us who were, you know, big fans during like the Generation X era, or just even like the classic Jubilee team ups, you know, Wolverine is an ally in this. She even they have a team up attack that they can do depending on the card that comes up. Chambers in this, Husk, nice to see some Husk appreciation. So like, there's some great characters in the mix to this. And this is all leading into the Age of Apocalypse expansion, the next big X expansion that is coming out in March, at the end of March. So at this point in time, this game went from having zero X-Men characters in it to having pretty much like a lot of the major core characters. I mean, between Cyclops, Rogue, Storm, Gambit, Wolverine, like all those people, Colossus, all those people are represented. Now we're adding Jubilee to the mix. It's a cool time to be an X-Men fan, and it's a cool time to be an X-Men fan in Marvel Champions. So wanted to highlight that. We'll have more on that on the site. And that teases up for, one quick thing actually before I want to mention, if you have been following our Star Wars Unlimited content, both on the Comic Book Nation YouTube page and here, the game is out now. I've been very excited about it. I've been playing more, and you can find an article that kind of, if you want to jump in for the first time, you don't know jack about it, you can go to comicbook.com and find our Everything You Need to Know article, which tells you the things you want to jump into first, which decks, which boxes you want to grab, what all the cards mean, all of that stuff. So one-stop resource there if you are a newbie either to Star Wars or to TCGs in general. So I hope that helps. Leading into this, we have an X-Men relaunch to talk about, Kofi.
Yes, we do. I don't know. I know you're Matt's sick, just behind the scenes, so I'm going to let him catch his breath because he's been down bad for couple of days. I know he's measuring out the breaths each a little bit of a time. So, yeah, we got a whole relaunch plan. So, if you don't know, like we've been doing this for 6 years here at Comic Book Nation. Go back to the start of the feed if you want to hear us being young and hilarious. But one of the things we started off with as our main features of this podcast was tracking the X-Men reboot with Jonathan Hickman's Krakoa era of X-Men, which began with House of X and Powers of 10. Well, now that run that began in 2019 is officially coming to an end with this, you know, the whole Fall of X event. But then we are going to get a new start in X-Men from the Ashes. And it is now been revealed who the creative teams for these books will be and what they will kind of be about. So here's what we're going to be working with. Starting at the top, we are going to be getting X-Men. Which one did they do? I forget which order they do it in this chip. Okay, so yeah, it's X-Men, then Uncanny, then Exceptional. Got it. So we're going to be doing X-Men, just a title called X-Men, which will be written by Jed MacKay, with art by Ryan Stegman, some of the people that we've had in the Krakoa era. And this team will be Cyclops, Beast, Magneto, Psylocke, Kid Omega, and Temper with Magic and Juggernaut. So kind of eclectic blend of characters, right? It's a pretty eclectic blend right there. And that's pretty interesting. People are already freaking out about Cyclops' new outfit. And yeah, it's an outfit. He looks a little young, but I don't know if Cyclops is young or what's going on there. There's a little bit of a mystery, but it looks like we're going to get Psylocke with a pretty gnarly sword. And some of this feels like it was teed up in Dead X-Men, because they did get to a reality where there was a kind of an X-Men team that kind of resembled this, and they were kind of dealing with that. So I'm really kind of interested to see what's going on here. Jed MacKay has been doing some interesting things, so it's going to be really interesting to see like what happens here.
Yeah. If you've been following his Avengers run, I think he is custom made for this book. Like he knows how to maximize a team, and he's been doing essentially a pre-Alpha X-Men over there anyway. He's been like showing like what their abilities can do individually and together and why they're important. Just move that over to X-Men. You got a match made in heaven. I am so hyped for that, but that's not even the best. I mean, that's like one of three amazing creative teams. So go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry. And I just like, but it's just like the interesting personalities you're going to have. Like, it's interesting. It looks like we're going to get a classic Beast and Cyclops. Psylocke's going to be a little bit edgier. Magic's been kind of stepping out. Then you get these people like Juggernaut, Magneto, and Kid Omega, which alone sounds like it'll be interesting to see. So, oh man. All right. But let's move on to one of mine that I think I'm the most excited about, which was Uncanny X-Men by Gail Simone and David Marquez. And that'll be coming out in August. And that team will be Rogue, Gambit, Nightcrawler, Jubilee, and Wolverine kind of doing their thing and going on an adventure. And finally, we're going to get Eve Ewing and Carmen Carnero doing Exceptional X-Men, which we'll see Kitty Pryde and White Queen Emma Frost training a next generation of X-Men who will be new characters or characters I'm not at least familiar with, Bronze, Axo, and Melee. So now let's go back up. So I want to order this because in my head I ordered it as Uncanny X-Men, then X-Men, then Exceptional X-Men, because I made the joke in our Slack that what Marvel to me is essentially doing is giving a X-Men team to every kind of generation of readers. So Uncanny X-Men, Gail Simone's team, Uncanny X-Men, Gail Simone's team is clearly to me for the Gen X X-Men fans. Those people who read 80s X-Men and got into 90s X-Men, and this is your team because this is it, like right here, right? Like this was who they created for kind of the Gen X or X-Men. Then you get, this X-Men book from MacKay, which seems very much like millennial X-Men. This seems like the new X-Men, the kind of weird, offbeat, classic mix of X stuff that we're going to get. And then clearly this Exceptional X-Men is some damn Gen Z X-Men if I've ever seen it in my life. Right from the cover art, you can tell what they're going for there. So you get an X-Men, you get an X-Men, you get an X-Men. This is going to be wild. And I'm very interested to see what happens when you put your chips across the roulette board. I mean, it's going to work to some extent because I saw, took one look at Gail Simone's thing and I was like, okay, I'm in. Like, yeah, you know, exactly. What X-Men I came up under. I came up under Rogue and the Leather Jacket and Jubilee being the new kid on the block and all that, and her and Wolverine. And yeah, so I'm already in. So nice work.
I it's funny, like looking at the creative teams, I actually would have expected X-Men, just the one that's just X-Men, to be Simone's book, typically because of the roster. Like that roster, just Kid Omega alone, like that dude is built for Simone. Like there are certain characters that scream Gail Simone's kind of, ability to write banter and break down a character and find, lighthearted areas to explore, but also kind of deep, rich ones, right? That roster, if you had just given me the creative teams and the roster separately, I would have picked that one to be Simone. So I am surprised that she's writing the straight up, what feels like classic group. Obviously, I cannot wait to see Jubilee in her, talented pencil there, right? And pen. Like, I'm very excited to see what she has there. But I'm also super stoked for Ewing's book. Like, Carnero, if you've been looking at the Captain Marvel book during Kelly Thompson's run, Carnero was doing some beautiful artwork in that book. So I'm very excited to see what she can do with this new X-Men team. You also have Kitty Pryde and Emma Frost, two of my favorite X-Men characters.
Yeah. Marauders.
So that's Marauders. That's essentially, hey, let's take the leaders of Marauders and put some newbies with them. And that can be magic if it's done well. So like across the board, I'm hyped. I will say the McKay one is probably the one that speaks to me directly, only because I'm a huge Cyclops fan, always have been. And I also Psylocke as well. Like those characters are just kind of were my era in a lot of ways. And I'm excited to see what, if you've been reading his Moon Knight, my God, his Moon Knight is so good. And he can do I'm so excited to see what he can do with Juggernaut. And I don't care about that character at all. Never have, but I'm excited to see what he can do. So yeah, I'm hyped for this. We'll see if they can retain some of the Krakoa elements that I've loved, but I'm excited for this so far.
Are you a Cyclops, Psylocke shipper? Is that what you're trying to tell us? Words?
No, I am a Cyclops, Emma Frost shipper for life. Sorry. I've always been in favor of that relationship. Jean can go, catch a ship somewhere else. I've always been there.
Wow.
Always been there. That is my preeminent couple of X-Men. Other than Rogue and Gambit, obviously. But like them, that's been my thing. So that's always been a hot take for me, but I love them.
So then Jean with Wolverine, or how does that work?
No, I don't care what Jean does. She could do whatever. Okay. She is free to pursue whoever she would like to pursue.
Well, I mean, in the Krakoa era, she was on that Zendaya Challengers tip with getting Cyclops and Wolverine. She was like, I'm not making choices.
Wow, what a 2020. Did not expect that reference.
You remember that McKay thing? We did a whole story on that. Pointed out the chart where they had the little secret passages between their rooms. So, yeah, Jean Grey was like, yeah, I'm done making choices here. I can't even sing that song. Jesus. All right, move on. Let's move on. So, Janelle, how do you feel? Because we're going to be throwing you. I mean, you're going in the deep end of this X-Men relaunch. But hopefully it'll be like a good onboarding point, because you're kind of the person we got to watch here, because you don't want to get too deep into none of this X-Men craziness. You've made that very clear. And you have a threshold. When it's good, accessible X-Men, you're in. When it gets too much into the Cable Bishop of it all, you're like, leave me out of this. So
I mean, I will say I do like Bishop, because I have a mod in my channel that is named after Bishop. So I actually know a little bit of, so I will correct you on that. So he's like, Bishop's the best X-Men. You have to get to know Bishop. I'm like, all right, I'll get to know Bishop. And then like, I love Magic. I love Magic because she just looks cool. So I feel like there are obviously like buzzwords, and there are certain X-Men and certain mutants that get you tickle my fancy, get me excited about it in each, I guess, iteration of this. So I don't really know how I'm going to, I hope that I don't get a little overwhelmed, but I'm going in with a positive headspace because I have been missing, you know, we don't read our comics as much in here. So, like for the main show. So I feel like learning more about these characters and like developing my knowledge of X-Men is paying off, and I'm ready. Like I am ready. Let's do this.
And if none of this works, X-Men 97 drops next week.
Oh my gosh. I'm actually so excited for that too. So,
oh yeah, no, we're going to be on the X-Men 97 tip next week. Don't worry about that.
Perfect.
We're going to be covering that. You can also check out the Fade Zero feed. They have some stuff from like premiere events and reactions early. So go over there and check that out after you check out some of our stuff too. And yeah, X-Men 97 will be in conversation. I actually cut some conversation about that this week because of what happened. And I was just like, yeah, until we know more, I'm cutting that out. We're not talking about that yet, because that keeps getting weirder by the moment. So we will be talking about the show X-Men 97 come next week when it premieres. So, all right, that's a great place to kind of take us out as any. We are Comic Book Nation, the only show that does it all for geek culture. As I said at the start, we've dropped a lot of content this week. Thank you to everybody who came to last week's show. Which quickly has become the biggest episode of any comic book podcast this year and maybe of last year, I mean, too, for our kind of immediate reaction and eulogy to Akira Toriyama, creator of Dragon Ball. I got a lot of positive feedback. We never do something like that for traffic. I just really want to be clear about that. Like, those are not traffic plays. That was us kind of reacting in real time to something very sad, but I got a lot of great messages from people saying, hey, you know, I didn't even necessarily listen to the show that caught that or had somebody pass it to them and say, you know, thank you. And what you guys said in the discussion really helped me and helped me through that tough moment. And that's the kind of stuff I really like about this show. It's when I get messages like that. I don't share my feelings with you guys because I like to just keep it, you know, real detached. I got my eightfold fence up. There you go. There's a Shogun reference. But that kind of stuff really does touch me and makes me feel good about what we're doing and why we do this. So thank you, everybody, for jumping in and helping that episode become something very special in a dark moment. And thank you, everybody, who's been listening to all of our segments. We have Anime Initiative for you anime fans. We have Quick Save for all the gaming fans, where we're doing our Halo recaps and talking gaming news. Matt's doing the poll list. We have those other shows on the other feeds for Marvel and Pokemon, and we have all kinds of stuff in between. Our boy Liam Crowley did the Riptide Radio for the Percy Jackson show. So if you're just getting into that, we have a whole show for that as well. Go check it all out on the Comic Book Nation feeds. All right, that'll do it for me. This is Kofi Outlaw. You can find me out there on socials along with my co-hosts.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me on YouTube at Connor J. Casey.
Yeah, you can find me at Janelle Wheeler and everything except for Twitch, where it's just my first name, Janelle.
Oh, you locked that down? You just doing the share?
I did.
And the Beals? You did the Beals? All right. Yeah. Nice. All right. Everybody take it easy. Have a good week. Thank you guys for tuning in as always. And we will see you sooner before later with another one of our Comic Book Nation segments. Peace.